Welcome to another podcast brought to you by the Academy World. Today, I'm delighted to say I have Richard with us from CSR, who helps and guides businesses and organisations on how to become more, environmentally aware and focused, plus other responsibilities which are really important in the business workplace. So welcome, Richard. Thank you for joining today.
Thank you, Andrew. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you on this podcast this morning.
I'm very much looking forward to it. And I know our listeners will be interested on how they take the first steps, or if they've already taken steps, where to move forward. So just a reminder to the listeners, this has been brought to you by the Academy World. What we do is we help SMEs in whatever part of the journey you're in. But I'm now going to ask Richard, Richard, how have you ended up sitting exactly where you're sitting now? Where's your background?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. It's a good question because it's not a space I've always been in. So I trained as a branding consultant, but I've always been involved in branding for purpose. So, you know, even though my first job was at BP's head office in London during a rebranding program at the end of the 80s, I kind of moved forward with branding and always used the phrase that your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room. So in other words, it's the stories that people tell about your business to others, their experience of you. Now, I think branding historically was about products and services. Oddly enough, I now think it's about the responsibility businesses have to people and planet. And that's how our customers, our staff, our supply chain are judging our organizations. And we saw this grow. So we supported the International CSR Excellence Awards, which we co-founded about 12 or 15 years ago. We worked with businesses in the branding space around their language changing from look at how good we are doing this to look at how responsible we are with regards to how we operate. And I took the step then to establish CSR accreditation at the request of a business group who were looking for something. And we discovered that there wasn't anything, and I wanted to take that space. It was something I'm passionate about, something I'm driven to deliver, and as a result, we were able to establish a unique framework and a new definition for what CSR means.
Okay, so let's first of all, what does CSR actually stand for?
So historically, CSR stands for corporate social responsibility, and I came from that corporate background. My beef with it is I don't think it should be exclusively for corporates. So we wanted the C to be inclusive. And so from the beginning, we deliberately became CSR accreditation so we could tell the story that the C stands for company, for charity, for community, and more importantly, for collaboration. So we recognized from day one that if we're going to change the world for a better place, to leave a positive legacy, that we have to do it together from the top down and the bottom up. It involves us human beings, and it's about how we work collaboratively to deliver that collaborative social responsibility.
Okay, so let's first of all, because there's lots of energy behind what we're talking about here, but from our previous conversation, pre-podcast, you've got a fair number of connections in government and other associations. So just to give our listeners a bit of an idea how in-depth you are, can you just give us an overview on those?
Yeah, I mean, I wear multiple hats, and that really completely enhances our my businesses and my team's experience around environmental and social responsibility. So I am currently the president for the Thames Valley Chamber of Commerce for Buckinghamshire. So I've got a good insight into the SME market, the small businesses, and also looking at the importance of place as well, which is really critical to positive social responsibility. I also sit on the what was the All Parties Parliamentary Group, but it's the Policy Liaison Group for ESG. And it's interesting watching how that's moving and shifting and how we're seeing a move away from the language of ESG, which I think has become complex and distracting. And within the framework of CSR accreditation, we've always worked with membership bodies. So we work with governments overseas because we're an international business. We work with organisations like the Chartered Institute of Waste Management, GGI, who are an international membership group for accountancy firms and lawyers, and many other membership groups like that. Currently, we're talking with the British Association of Jewellers, for example, because, again, there's a requirement to address sustainability, or as we like to say, environmental and social issues around the production of jewellery.
Okay, so let's just do a bit of a retrack. What does ESG stand for?
So ESG is environment, social and governance. And just to make it absolutely clear from our point of view, ESG is how the world's financial markets rate risk and opportunity when investing in businesses. So acquisition, shareholders, mergers and so on and so forth. You use then rating agencies that were the financial rating agencies who have moved into that space. And those rating agencies will score your organization based on its actions. And that score is then used by the global financial markets to make investment decisions. What ESG isn't is a framework, and it is not CSR. There's a symbiotic relationship between the two. But ESG is for the senior management team, for the shareholders, for the investors, where environmental and social responsibility is for the internal stakeholders, the staff, in other words, the supply chain, the customers, the end users, and it's a lot more about building a purpose-driven culture within an organisation.
Okay, so I definitely wasn't expecting that as the answer what ESG stood for, because I've always seen it at the bottom of larger companies' websites saying, here's our ESG, and then that goes for environmental, but it's interesting to have the background on that. But for most of our listeners, if we prove as a business or that we're doing taking our responsibilities seriously and taking action to make everything better, is there actually a business benefit?
Absolutely. Huge. I mean, we almost leave with that. So we talk about this return on social investment. In other words, what's the cost of not doing these things? That return on social investment can be seen in staff retention, which is huge. So that improves productivity. It can be seen in a new generation making a decision about the kind of business they want to work for. So it really affects recruitment. And we are seeing that generation looking for purpose-driven companies above payroll. So that's a real sea change that we've seen. It's also about tendering. So, being able to have the information that you can put into public sector tenders typically. It's about attracting investment. It's about brand reputation. So you've seen a lot of high profile stories of businesses that have struggled because they have not delivered with regards to their social and environmental credentials. And we are seeing a lot of pressures with supply chain. So, for example, the NHS have mandated a requirement to have a carbon reduction plan if you want to stay on their procurement roster. So there are many, many drivers for businesses to be commercially beneficial from social responsibility. We actually show it as a profit center, but there's that return on social investment as well, which is the impact we make, the positive actions. So the carbon reduction that we have, the reduction of waste, the improved satisfaction in terms of staff, improved quality around diversity and inclusion and gender equality, and also mental health and well-being and so on and so forth. So, there's that social return on investment and that return on social investment, both are equal. So I would argue the future shape of business is measured in financial value and social value. And they both have an important role to play in the long-term sustainability and profitability of businesses.
So this is no longer a big business thing to do, even sole traders. If they go through this journey, then actually they can define their difference, which actually could attract additional business they wouldn't have got potentially otherwise.
Completely believe that, and we have a lot of evidence to support that. CSR accreditations were set up to address micro businesses through to multinationals, and actually it is the SME section of the market that is where we get most of our business. We get startups and we get sole traders. We've had a really great VA who works from a home office, who was a gold CSR accredited organization. And we find that actually the smaller the business, the more ability to deliver on environmental and social responsibility an organization is. The premise being that larger organizations often have departments, there's more red tape, they're less flexible to make decisions and do things. So we measure the impact of CSR on people, not money. So, we can see that small organizations give a lot more per head than larger organizations do.
Okay, so let's start going through the journey. So there's four pillars, what I understand we're going to be discussing today. So could you talk through how does someone start the journey of, I'm getting a tick here.
So thank you. It's a good question in the sense that we wanted a straightforward and simple framework. We believe that the language of social responsibility has become completely cluttered with acronyms, initializations, and industry jargon, and it goes over the heads of nearly everybody. So we wanted to start with layman's terms, and the first thing we did was establish the four pillars of environment, workplace, community, and philanthropy. And within those pillars, breaking it down, for example, and under environment, we look at things like energy, at waste, at utilities, travel, and so on and so forth. Workplace, we'll look at apprenticeships, mental health and well-being, good governance. Community, we will look at community engagement, so working with the community, local economic development, recruiting locally, buying locally, and philanthropy, supporting the third sector through volunteering, pro bono, cash fundraising, and so on and so forth. So we kind of use words that people understand. And if you look at environment, people get using LED lights to save energy, or doing car sharing, or taking computers off standby. They get kind of recycling plastic and cardboard and reducing kind of landfill, going towards zero landfill. So I think it's important that we build a framework that people understand and can associate with, and then look at how they are delivering towards those areas.
So let's start with look at environment as an example. So what tools or what do you, how do you assist businesses reviewing their impact there?
So the process, it's the process of accreditation. Whether you become accredited or not is neither here nor there at this stage. It's the process. So the process allows you to baseline and benchmark what you are already doing. And what we are able to do is independently recognize and validate that. Our experience has shown that without exception, every organization we have spoken to is already delivering on those four pillars. So I'm sure your listeners will know that on the environmental pillar, when we start to go down our guidance, they say, yeah, we're doing, we have LED lights, we're doing that. Yes, we have a cycle to work scheme. Yes, we are doing various things. So the trick is, are you measuring it? You know, can you show the impact, and can you evidence what you're doing? We know that under increased scrutiny, we cannot make claims that we can't back up. In other words, a phrase I love is social responsibility is great for good storytelling, but you have to show the good story doing. So with regard to the environmental pillar, back to your question, there are things that organizations are already doing. And in some cases, they'll be measuring that. So we'll be looking at, reduction of energy through bills. Of course, that would equate to reduction in carbon. So we can provide support around algorithms that work out what that is. And we'll be able to see where the gaps are, where the holes are, and then encourage businesses to start to put KPIs in and key performance indicators in so they can start to measure what they're doing going forward. So the first time we ask companies to do this, we're not expecting all of this to be in place. We're expecting some of it to be in place. And within environment, there are certain things that companies can't do internally. So we would then make recommendations. So, for example, calculating an organization's carbon footprint, it's often best that they go to a third party provider to get that work done. And we have people that we can signpost to get that work looked at.
So is this if we just assume that the normal SME, so 10 employees, let's say, is this a massive commitment by them in time to go through this process, or because it sounds like there's a lot to do, or not?
So it's a big question we get all the time: is we don't have the time, we don't have the resources, and we can't afford to do it. So we always start off by the premise we're saying you're already doing it, so we want to show you the value you already have, and if you could communicate the value, the investment it is to your business. The trick is to identify individuals within the organization who can build the capacity to help you deliver on these things. And the other trick is to recognize that this is not a race, it's a journey. So we're looking at 1, 3, 5, 10-year strategies. You don't have to do this tomorrow. So look at what you're doing. Look at what you're doing well. Recognize the resources and capability you already have to carry to continue that forward. And understand that this is part of your business strategy. It's not separate. This is about how you're going to be a successful business. And the reason we talked about drivers earlier, but it's also environmental and social responsibility is as much about future-proofing. What's coming down the line in terms of regulation? What's going to be mandated? What are your suppliers going to ask you to do? And it's also about risk management. So what can you, you know, what's the risk of not doing these things? It's too late to do these when you've been told you have to, because your competitors will be 4 or 5 years ahead of you. So in other words, this is helping you plan forward, and it is all about planning. So, you know, companies can relax. It's not a race. Don't panic. You're doing a lot of great things already. Let's help you continue that journey to a destination that's relevant for your industry sector, your size of business, and where you are in the world.
Okay, so that's the sort of, we talked about environment. You mentioned earlier about apprenticeships. And how is that fitting into this, so I understand?
Well, it's a big passion of mine, apprenticeships. It's an area I get, you know, I get frustrated about that we don't give too much attention. We've got the skills levy coming in at the moment, which is, you know, encouraging businesses to look at apprenticeships from kind of like GCSE up to degree level. And where is that important? Well, that fits in with several of the pillars, because it's looking at an apprenticeship is about how you're supporting the local community. You're bringing a young person into your business. You're paying them to do a job. You're paying them to learn. You're paying them, you know, and that provides income within the local economy. But you're also contributing to your workplace as well. So, you know, education is a really important part of the workplace pillar. And in some cases, that might touch on the philanthropy and environmental pillars as well. So we see apprenticeships, work placements, training and education as a very important part of the workplace pillar. And just to make a point as well, don't panic if you're not doing these things, because part of the accreditation program is to get you to look at what you would like to do in the future. So, you know, we don't do apprenticeships, but we would like to. So, you know, we can now start to help you, you know, look at what the government's doing, how you can get guidance on how you can introduce apprenticeships to your area of work. So it's, you know, the process of accreditation, we give a lot of guidance. There's a lot of stuff you're going to be doing. There's stuff that we haven't listed because we don't know about, which you're doing that's unique to you. And there's going to be stuff that you're not doing now that you might want to in the future. And that might include how you look at work placements and apprenticeship schemes.
So, but if it's not appropriate to have an apprenticeship scheme for whatever reason, does that mean that's a cost and so therefore you can't be accredited?
No. So in other words, we don't have a box ticking exercise. And this is a really important factor. First of all, we don't talk at you, we talk with you. And secondly, we don't tell you what to do. We ask you what you're doing. And then we're able then to show where the gaps are. So a small business may say, look, we just not built for apprenticeships. But that's fine. You know, that doesn't matter. It might be that you talk at a local school. You might do a careers week. You might have someone who does a week's work experience from a local. But it's, you know, rather than having a list of do you have an apprentice, do you have work placements, and you don't, and therefore 000 scores, that's not how we roll. That's not what it's about. So our if you go through, first of all, the process of accreditation is how you baseline and benchmark where you are, and you can use that to great value. If you then get us to accredit it, we have an independent set of accreditors, assessors, who assess your application, and they are given a certain list of criteria in which they score against. And that is really around your overall contribution to environmental and social responsibility, not about any one specific thing. It's not fair to punish companies for not doing things because it's just not relevant for them at this point in time.
So I think this is really important for listeners to understand then. So this isn't a scenario that many tenders could be. If you can't tick the box, then you won't be successful. That's definitely not what this is. This is demonstrating what you've already done, demonstrating what you are planning to do. And in actual fact, like many of, so I would say, audit type processes, it's forcing you to think, and it probably opens up ideas you hadn't even considered in the past, which actually could have a business commercial benefit as well as an environmental or local community.
It's very true. It's great how this inspires thinking. At the end of the day, businesses are busy running businesses, and that's where their focus should be. It's a question of how do you embrace these other things as part of that business strategy. And what we've found with organisations, and in fact, I'm going to write an article about this because we've had this come back to us time and time again, of businesses, you know, from, you know, 5 to 10 employees up to 200 or 300 employees, setting up what they call their pillar teams. So identifying individuals in the organisation that take a pillar each, and it's their responsibility to have a look at what they've been doing in the past, what they're doing now, what's coming down the line that they would like to think about doing in the future, how they report that, and they'll have meetings twice a year, maybe 3 times a year to review, and that contributes to their ongoing sustainability strategy that they can build up over time. And then the premise being that sustainability evolves and changes and requirements are different, and as I say, recently we've had a lot of change in employment law that comes in October. That was voluntary, now that's mandated, so it's about, you know, and that's in the UK. We will see regulation coming in around hybrid working this year. We'll see more regulation coming in around, you know, single-use plastics and environmental concerns as well. So I think it's a question of helping businesses kind of take that information and use it at a speed and a level that they're capable of doing things with.
Okay, brilliant. So, Richard, we've covered quite high up sort of the four pillars and how this could look, but it still feels to me that actually there's quite a lot to do, or if I don't know what to do, how do I do it? So talk us through what support is there from you for companies to take that first step and then go through the journey.
Thank you. Well, we do provide as much support as we can in terms of tools and resources. So if I take the accreditation first, so CSRA accreditation is all about accreditation. That's what our main project, our main business area is. We support that with training, which I'll touch on, general consultancy, and then also social impact reporting. So if I just come back to the accreditation first, and then we'll look at those other areas, support areas. The accreditation, we have a fully interactive Get Started PDF that you can download from our website, and you can fill that in. It uses a matrix for each of the four pillars and simply asks you, what are you doing, what aren't you doing, what would you like to do? So it really helps you with a cup of coffee and a pencil very quickly scope out what you're doing. The bigger the organisation, the data gathering is where the time is taken. So I think we touched earlier on as how long does these things take. The actual application process is quite quick. The bit that takes the time is the data gathering, and the Get Started interactive PDF is a good way to start the data gathering. Smaller businesses, a single person can probably do it. The bigger the business, you might need to go down to accounts or HR or facilities to ask information about certain areas, and that might take you longer. So we have a very good tool there. We also have a fully interactive online survey, which is 5 questions. And those questions just ask you some overarching kind of information about what your company's doing, and then it generates an automatic report that tells you where you are on your sustainability journey. So it's a nice litmus test. It's not detailed, but it's just a nice litmus test to sort of give you a score and indication of where you are on your journey. So those tools are available. Behind that, we also provide consultation services where we will help you fill your application. We will support you. We have workshops on how you pull your information together, how you set up a team, how you communicate it, and so on and so forth. And we also have a training program that we do corporately, face-to-face, at your premises, to up to 25 individuals. And we also provide that as a learn-as-you-go online automated training program. And what that does is it helps you develop your ambassadors within the business, who are going to be the environmental and social responsibility enablers. So the online course is about 2.5 hours, 6 modules. You can do a module at a time over a week or two. It's properly certificated and counts towards your continued professional development. And if we come into your business and deliver a face-to-face workshop, it's a little bit more interactive. It's a day's workshop. And there's a lot of kind of interactive activities that we do as part of that workshop. Again, it's certificated. Everyone gets a certificate and it counts towards professional development. So the training and education really helps businesses focus. And then we have a series of satellite workshops that look at things like materiality, which is how you prioritize your sustainability programming. It will look at leadership and what makes a sustainable leader and the various other things. And then on the other end, we have the impact reporting, which typically is done when a company becomes accredited. We can take the content of that application and then rewrite it as a social impact report that becomes a little more of a kind of a glossy brochure, if you like, that you then share with your internal and external stakeholders to tell people what you're doing. Again, this isn't branding, and it's about how you can then communicate that on your website, through your LinkedIn channels, and so on and so forth. So in other words, the areas we have is accreditation, education, consultation, and communication. All the shims.
So, well, ultimately, then, therefore, you it's quite a hand-holding process with which you can take within reason your own pace. So if there's listeners now, I mean, we're recording this in February 2025, I'm assuming you say, okay, well, I want to get to that end goal by the end of 2025, and you build it to structures that's not disruptive to your business, totally manageable. But however, every week or month, you take a little step. And then even when accredited, you're continuing that journey, aren't you, of improvements as required?
I mean, the best way to look at it is that the accreditation application is the baseline. So don't wait till you're doing things, because we'll never get. Let's see where you are now, and that gives you a good starting point to continue what you've already started. And the great thing about that is we have something called CSR Associate Membership. So when a company becomes associate, they can pay 10% of their application fee today, and we will give them an associate membership now. They can share it with everybody, and they can tell people that we are committed to becoming fully accredited within 6 months. So we give you a framework. So associate membership means you can tell people now, put it into your tenders, put it on your website, LinkedIn, whatever, tell your staff, and then we charge based on how many employees there are in the business. So in other words, 1 to 3 employees, 4 to 20, 21 to 50, 50, you know, and the accreditation application fee goes up depending upon how many fees. The accreditation is valid for 3 years. And for the smaller businesses, the micros and the 4 to 20s, we are able to provide a monthly subscription fee. So there are different ways. The costs are on our website. They're not insurmountable. I think the value you get, it exceeds the cost of becoming accredited and doing all these things. I think it's an invaluable service to support businesses going forward.
And I also think, I know it shouldn't be the main reason you do it, but I do think that is a real driving force, I'm going to say, of a reason for any business to grab this, because there is a genuine business return with you know, if you want to employ people, employing different, you know, perhaps having a wider scope of who wants to work with you or apply with you because of what you stand for, or if you are going for tenders and defining your difference or proving that actually you're not just saying it, you're actually doing something.
Yeah, you've got to be. We're in a world now where people are scrutinize us far harder than ever before, and we want people to be authentic. We want people to back up with the claims, their claims where they can. We recognize that if you're a small business and you're saying we do recycling, and you send in a photograph of your recycling bins, we trust the fact that you are doing that. You know, we have to take trust as a main thing that people are doing. You know, it's not measure every single tiny thing, but obviously where you can start to do that, we see testimonials, photographs, especially when you support a charity. We say it's not how you are supporting the charity, but how a charity supports business by showing what good looks like and providing leadership and purpose-driven programming within that organization. But it's up to the charity to give you a testimonial, to give you an impact report. And again, not bragging. Thanks to your business's support, we were able to bring in 3 more palliative nurses, or we were able to train another guide dog, or whatever it might be. So we can show that we are contributing to the greater wealth of our communities and enriching the quality of lives for all of us, as well as leaving a positive legacy for future generations. It's all win-win, really, isn't it?
It is, definitely is. Well, look, Richard, I found this enlightening going through this review, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So, Richard, if someone wants to take this forward, how should they reach out to you?
So we have a very good website. It's www.csr-accreditation.co.uk. You can register there. You can get your associate membership there. You can look at our resources. You can download tools. So it's a great area to go and have a look at. You can contact me directly at rich@csr-accreditation.co.uk, or if you like, info@csr-accreditation.co.uk. That's pretty much the main routes to us, and then we can support you with our team after that. And an important note to make as well, which I keep forgetting sometimes, is that those companies who become accredited, often our relationship starts once you're accredited, not before. We'll support you to that, but really we want to look after you over the next 3, 5, 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. Okay, that's brilliant. Okay, so this podcast has been brought to you by the Academy World. And as I mentioned earlier, our role is to support businesses, whatever stage you're at or whatever your needs may be. So all contact details will be below this, wherever you're listening or watching this podcast. But meanwhile, Richard, thank you so much for your time today. Very much appreciated. And to everyone else, that's a wrap. And we will be talking to another expert next week, and have a good week. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.